As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Frustrated against Manchester United last weekend.
Salah again, and Darwin Nunez possibly in, and Diaz!
Sensational against West Ham last night.
Jones is slaloming his way through here. It's another one.
Liverpool's last two games sum up the predicament many fans are in. When trying to assess whether Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool 2.0 are really ready to win the Premier League this season.
You know, how good is this Liverpool team? It's almost ahead of schedule. I think the feeling was,
do they need to strengthen in January?
With Salah going to the African Nations Cup.
And will Arsenal this weekend provide a definitive acid test?
I don't feel that kind of pressure from other teams. We want to win our game.
I'm Joaquin Valera. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. All right, look, we've got to start with the breaking news as we record this podcast. Thursday morning, the European Court of Justice has ruled that FIFA and UEFA rules blocking a potential European Super League were unlawful. The expectation, of course, being that it will open the door for clubs like Barcelona, Real Madrid to try again. James, you've spoken to the club this morning. What's their position on it?
Well, Liverpool insist their position is unchanged. I think I don't think this ruling changes anything really, because it's not as if it was a legal barrier that stopped Liverpool from signing up back in 2021. Mm. It was more the sheer force of the backlash that was felt that led to Fenway Sports Group, the owners, issuing, you know, what was a pretty grovelling apology at the time. And I did an interview with Tom Werner, Liverpool's chairman, last year, ahead of the Champions League final. And I asked him about it then, because over the last couple of years, this has always reared its head every so often. And he said, we will not go back in. You know, we will not sign up to a breakaway league. His wording was, you know, it's in our rearview mirror. We've acknowledged it was a mistake. Certainly, Liverpool say their stance remains exactly the same on that.
Okay, nice. So, well, our football correspondent, Phil Buckingham, is all over this story on site. And you can find out more on today's daily football briefing. But here's a flavour of what might happen next.
So after 2 years of legal back and forth, the European Court of Justice this morning delivered a significant verdict for the future of club football. The rules of UEFA and FIFA, they made clear, were not in line with EU law, and banning clubs from joining any breakaway competition amounted to the abuse of a dominant position. This does not mean the infamous Super League proposals are about to be dusted down and relaunched, but the court ruling has emboldened clubs like Real Madrid and Barcelona in their attempts to launch a competition they believe can topple the Champions League.
I want to make it very clear that Barca's position on the matter of a new European League format is not at all intended to go against the Spanish League, nor against the national leagues in general.
A22, the company behind the Super League plans, have already announced a new blueprint that will see 64 clubs competing across three leagues, with Real Madrid president Florentino Perez calling this a landmark day. UEFA are attempting to stay calm and point out that this ruling is by no means an endorsement of a new European Super League. Fans groups have also been quick to stress that this remains a deeply unpopular vision. Yet this lingering threat is not going away.
Right, James, let's talk Liverpool, right? What a win yesterday. A bit of a bounce back from Manchester United, which felt like a bit of a stalemate. And, you know, Jurgen Klopp has spoken about it. I know there's been spats between Van Dijk and Roy Keane.
He needs a reminder himself. He's playing for a club who's won one title in 30-odd years.
Back to winning ways and a bit more convincing from Liverpool.
It was the perfect riposte, really, to what was a pretty dour performance against Manchester United. And I think it was just one of those days that kind of left you asking a lot of questions in terms of where exactly are Liverpool at, because it was underwhelming, especially when you felt that it was a real opportunity to kind of inflict some more misery on their arch rivals. Like, they couldn't take advantage of that. Certainly everything that Jurgen Klopp had demanded in terms of delivering a response, because, you know, six changes, it could easily have been a bit disjointed. But in fact, that freshness gave Liverpool the kind of fluency and control that I probably haven't seen since they beat Brentford in the early part of November. Because even though they've been winning games since then, it's been a struggle and there's been heroic fight backs and scrappy wins. But yeah, that was winning in style at Anfield on Wednesday night, because they absolutely dismantled West Ham.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking when I saw the Carabao Cup semi-final draw yesterday, I was thinking, whoa, get past Fulham, Chelsea, Middlesbrough sitting in the final. You'd like to think Liverpool fans have got to be licking their lips just a little bit. Don't want to get ahead of myself, but just a little bit.
Yeah, 100%. Liverpool, if Liverpool play to their capabilities, they should now go on and win the Carabao Cup. There's no doubt about that. I think you'd expect it to be a Liverpool-Chelsea final. I think as much as Chelsea have struggled this season, and, you know, and there's a lot of issues there in terms of, you know, some of the recruitment decisions they've made and the money that's been squandered. But with the star talent there, Chelsea still have the ability to raise it, I think, especially on a one-off final appearance. But yeah, I think when you speak to the players and the staff at Liverpool, they see the Carabao Cup as really important in terms of what it could do in terms of energising what is essentially a new-look team. I mean, Klopp this season has talked about this being, you know, he said, you know, it might be my year eight, he said, but for this group, it's year one. And they feel that, you know, 2 years ago when Liverpool won the Carabao Cup, they got great momentum off the back of that, went on and won the FA Cup, missed out on the Premier League by the, you know, the most narrow margins, you know, missed out on the Champions League as well in the final to Real Madrid. So I think they certainly don't see this as kind of getting in the way and a distraction. It makes for a busy January. But I think, you know, the way as well that Klopp has been able to rotate the squad and give people on the fringes more game time. Yeah, the Carabao Cup has had a real energising impact on the whole squad.
Yeah, we look at this sort of Liverpool 2.0 and I guess ambitions from the top end of the season, from what I was hearing anyway, and you're probably more privy to it than I am, as top four felt like a real possibility or a really solid ambition. Now Liverpool are in a position where if they beat Arsenal on Saturday, they go top of the league. Are you surprised by how this is all kind of going? Because I've said it before, whisper it quietly, don't write off Liverpool.
Yeah, there's no doubt that they've massively exceeded expectations so far. I think rewind to August, and it was a bit of a step into the unknown, really, because, you know, they'd lost six senior players. I think if you add it all up, it was about just over 1,600 appearances for the club between them. You know, you kind of never really know how that dynamic is going to shift, because, you know, it is rare to lose your captain and your vice captain in Milner and Henderson in such quick succession. Of course, the interest from Saudi Arabia kind of increased the size of the rebuilding job in midfield, because Klopp hadn't intended to move Henderson or Fabinho on. You had the unwanted distraction of, you know, the pursuit of Mohamed Salah and Liverpool having to dig their heels in over that. And then, you know, when you bring in four midfielders, only one of which had played Premier League football previously, I don't think you can ever be too sure in terms of how quickly they'll adapt to the different challenge that poses. So, you know, they've won, you know, a lot of points from losing positions. I think it's something like 18 points already, with more than anyone else in the Premier League, which suggests that there's great resilience there in terms of coming back when the chips are down. But, you know, the flip side of that is, you know, there's issues there performance-wise that still need to be ironed out. So that's why I think no one I speak to on Merseyside is getting too carried away, because I think probably two reasons. One is they didn't expect to be up there this season. It feels like this is kind of ahead of schedule for this team. And secondly, the fact that it's not like Liverpool are consistently playing like a team that has what it takes to go on and become champions. I think they've still got plenty to prove. I think performance-wise, it's certainly very different to 29-20 when they were week after week, you know, just winning just with such consummate ease and keeping opponents at arm's length. It's different at the minute.
The emergence of that new role for Trent Alexander-Arnold has been, you know, talk of the town, as well as his new boots, right? And we've spoken about this. But did they change that much last night, if anyone didn't watch that match? Like, what was different from that Man United match, for instance, to the match we saw against West Ham in the Carabao Cup?
Yeah, there was a few interesting tweaks. I mean, it was, you know, for a start, Trent Alexander-Arnold was one of those that was rested initially, although he still came on for the last half an hour and helped himself to two assists. But, you know, it is interesting that kind of transition of Trent positionally, because, you know, again, on Wednesday night, he came on purely as a midfielder rather than this hybrid role that he's filled for most of the time since kind of early April onwards. It was more of a kind of old style Liverpool set up tactically with Joe Gomez at right back. He was staying very wide, providing the width down the right hand side. And then, you know, the biggest thing was the greater energy and dynamism they had in the middle of the park, because that has been lacking a bit recently. They're missing Alexis McAllister. You know, he's going to be out into the new year with a knee injury he suffered against Sheffield United. So Szoboszlai, having set ridiculously high standards in his first few months at the club, had definitely gone off the boil probably the last 5 or 6 weeks. Yet against West Ham, you know, he really had his swagger back. You know, he scored a beauty to get them off to a flyer. But it was more his general play as well as Szoboszlai. That felt like a really important step forward for him ahead of facing Arsenal. Curtis Jones was the absolute pick of the bunch. I mean, he was afterwards seeing Klopp and Curtis Jones deep in conversation on the pitch. And Curtis revealed that,
I think Darwin had the ball and I could have made a run. It was a throw-in, but it was at the end of the game, so I was saying that I wanted to manage the game. I wouldn't want it to...
At the time, from 40 yards away, you thought, well, Klopp must be congratulating him on his fantastic two goals. But, you know, I think that is the way that Klopp and his staff with Curtis Jones, it almost like always demanding more, because they know he's got such a high ceiling and they just want to see it, you know, week in, week out. And Klopp talked about, you know, what a difference it makes when Curtis Jones does things at pace, where he doesn't slow the game down, where he doesn't have too many touches, where he's positive and direct. And even Nunes, even though, you know, I think that's now 11 games without a goal for Darwin Nunes, but he was much more involved, much more in sync with the players around him. Obviously, he played off the left a lot for Benfica, and it just seemed, there was just something about it that seemed to click better for him.
Liverpool aren't shy of shots. Taking what 34 shots on Sunday and 29 last night. Premier League average per game is what, 13. Is this intentional? Like, is it just a pepper, you know, the opposition box as much as possible, that one lands if possible?
Yeah, I mean, it is the Klopp way, isn't it? To like, it is this, you know, he always wants his teams to play on the front foot and to keep asking questions. I think the biggest difference between the two games, because you're right, when you look at it, you think, wasn't that much difference in terms of the overall shot numbers. Against United, too often it just smacked to desperation, and it was actually decision-making really let them down. And they were, you know, I think against United, 15 of the 34 shots were from outside the box. And quite often those shots were taken on when there was an overlap outside them that was ignored. And it was like, oh, you know, this is just, you know, a lack of composure, panic and desperation creeping in. But against West Ham, it was different. You know, the decision making was a lot better. You know, they worked the kind of their passing triangles a lot more in terms of getting in behind West Ham. And yeah, it could easily have been a heavier beating. I mean, it was tricky as well, because West Ham were absolutely dreadful. And a night like that is always difficult to make that kind of judgment of, was it because Liverpool were so good they never let West Ham play, or did West Ham just play into their hands because there was so much space for Liverpool to exploit. I mean, Curtis Jones is, well, both of his goals really were perfect examples of that. I mean, the first one, he plays a lovely 1-2 with Darwin Nunes, but nobody tracks Curtis Jones's run into the box. And then the second one, he's allowed to run from pretty much the halfway line. Liverpool are always at their best when they're playing at a high tempo, putting teams under pressure, forcing mistakes, and then feeding off that energy from the stands. And that was the issue against Man United, that they didn't do that. They weren't able to sustain it, and it just petered out. But against West Ham, it was just kind of that everything just clicked into gear again.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you are not in the right shape, give your ticket to somebody else. I was not overly happy, I have to say it now, with the atmosphere behind me. I don't know. I ask people, what do we want?
So we change a lot. Klopp isn't silly. He's ready, and he's getting that crowd ready to make them the 12th man when Arsenal come and play at Anfield, surely.
No, 100%. That was the motivation behind his comments in his press conference afterwards, because he knows exactly what he's doing there. In terms of, like, he's been around the block enough, hasn't he, in terms of, knowing when you can use the media to whip the locals into a frenzy, and where the dugout is at Anfield, the press box is only probably 15, 20 metres behind there. And there was a passage in the first half where Klopp kind of turned and kind of admonished some of the fans behind him. It was, I think there were a few moans and groans when an attack broke down, and it was 1-0 to Liverpool at the time. The atmosphere wasn't that bad at all. It was a hell of a lot better than it was against Manchester United. But yeah, Klopp is just firing people up with those comments. I think he knows as well, a 5:30 kickoff under the lights at Anfield just before Christmas. Mm. That place will be bouncing come Saturday night.
I know you mentioned it earlier. You were saying, no one's getting too excited yet about the title challenge. But look, I mean, Andy Jones, did a deep dive on Liverpool's chances, really. And I don't know if this season is so wide open that we're not going to get the massive points tally as City have naturally set over the last few years, which actually opens the door for Liverpool in many ways.
It does, yeah. And I think that's why it was interesting that I think Klopp felt there'd been an overreaction to the game against Man United, because he said, I think one of his comments was, really, is that where we're at now, where we draw with Manchester United? And it's such a negative thing to happen. And I think it kind of dates back to, I think Liverpool fans were a bit scarred by this era where, Liverpool got 97 points and didn't win the title. That is like, even now it just seems absolutely ludicrous. They got 92 points and didn't win the title 2 years ago. So there's almost that, I think it's almost ingrained in your head that you've got to be perfect, and that every slip up is like, oh my God, what are the ramifications of this? And I think you're right, when you look at the Premier League this season, it's different. Man City, not the force they were. I still think I still have them down as title favourites, because I think we've seen before they're capable of rattling off 15 wins on the spin in the spring. And Arsenal, yes, I think are better equipped, having learned some lessons from last season. And I think that's what gives Liverpool a chance. The fact that it's like, of course they're not perfect. And, do they have a dominant holding midfielder? Probably not. Is the front line sparkling all across like as you'd want it to? Not really. Is there a concern there at centre-back with depth-wise, with, losing Joel Matip to a season-ending injury? They're missing Andy Robertson to the back end of January. So there's all these things that you could kind of say, well, that's a doubt. But what they're up against isn't kind of perfect either. And I think that's what makes this title race so exciting. And, you know, if Liverpool can beat Arsenal on the weekend, they'll go into Christmas, you know, top of the table, you know, in the semi-finals of the Carabao Cup, in the last 16 of the Europa League. You know, that's one hell of a position to be in terms of having a platform for the second half of the season.
All right, let's move on to January. It's always looming over so many teams. FFP, of course, and so many thoughts on who to bring in. But I guess when you're talking about a team like Liverpool, even Arsenal, Manchester City, it's not just bringing players in, it's bringing the right players in. I know Jurgen Klopp is very much on that vibe. I'm not going to get someone unless they are right for this squad. They've got an interim sporting director at the moment in time. What are the plans in terms of January and who might be brought in? Do you know?
I think it'll be a relatively quiet month. I certainly don't think we'll see much activity. There'll be a few players coming back to Liverpool and then potentially going back out. Big decision to make on Fabio Carvalho, who has struggled for game time at RB Leipzig. Liverpool have been in discussions about cutting that loan short and then sending him out somewhere else for the second half of the season. Similarly, Nat Phillips. And in terms of incomings, I mean, the most obvious area to address would be centre-back. Yet when I asked Jurgen Klopp about the prospects of doing that recently, he was quite dismissive in terms of, you know, do you really think someone of the required caliber is going to be available at, you know, an acceptable price? You know, he talked about, you know, no one's going to be sticking a centre half under the Christmas tree for us as a gift. So I think a lot will depend on how Liverpool get through the coming weeks with the schedule as it is. But I think if they were to lose another centre half, then it suddenly goes from, yeah, ideally you'd bring someone in, to actually you have to bring someone in. But, you know, that situation has been eased a little bit by just how impressive Jarrell Kwanza has been. I mean, this is a young player that's come from nowhere. You know, if you'd have said back in July that he'd end up playing 15, 20 games this season, you just wouldn't have believed it. You know, he was one of those examples of where Klopp loves to give kids a chance in pre-season. And his attitude is, right, well, go on, show me what you can do. Show me your mentality and your work ethic, and you know, and if you're good enough, you stay around and you'll get chances. And Kwanza has just been an absolute revelation. So, you know, you've got him effectively as backup to Virgil van Dijk, to Gomez, and to Ibrahima Konate. A lot of fans would say also the holding midfield role. You know, Liverpool have been repeatedly linked with Andre at Fluminense, but again, the people I've spoken to at Liverpool have said, you know, they're unlikely to go back in for him. He was looked on as a possible alternative last summer when they were struggling to do a deal with Southampton for Romeo Lavia. In the end, they moved on from Andre. And I think when you look at, you know, Endo growing in confidence as well in that number six role, McAllister's obviously played there a lot. I don't think they see that as like as a real kind of necessity. So it'll be interesting. I think what we know from Liverpool just from recent years is that if a deal presents itself, you know, that sometimes emerges from nowhere at an acceptable price, they'll press the button on it pretty quickly. I mean, you know, the 2 years ago, the noises were, no, we're not going to do anything. And then suddenly Porto needed the money and were willing to sell Luis Diaz. Tottenham suddenly came in for him. And Liverpool knew, okay, it's now or never. If we want this guy, we can't sit still till the summer. We have to do it. And they were very clinical in terms of pulling that one off. 12 months ago, similar situation with PSV and Cody Gakpo. Again, one they thought that was probably for the summer, but you know, PSV made it clear they were willing to do business. Bang, Liverpool did that. So I don't think you can completely rule it out. But at the minute, yeah, I don't think we're going to see a busy January for Liverpool.
George Schmatka, interim sporting director for the time being. Is it a thought that Liverpool deal with this, you know, at the end of the season, or is that something that's continuously being looked at? Because obviously, you know, Manchester United are also looking for one as well. Does that, you know, change things up a bit as to who's available?
Yeah, I think Schmatka, when he came in, he was effectively tempted out of retirement. It was always very clear from all sides this was a short-term appointment. Unless there's a change of tact, I'd expect him to still be there throughout the January window. And then I think that period then will be when Liverpool will hopefully recruit a longer-term successor. Because it has been, you know, a period of turbulence in terms of that sporting director position, because obviously Michael Edwards was so influential for so long, you know, across everything, this, you know, this real top operator. And then, you know, they thought they had the long-term successor in Julian Ward, who'd been his deputy, yet then, you know, Ward walking away, he felt he needed a break from football after just a year at the job. And as you said, Liverpool aren't the only big club looking for one. And I know when they had the search last time, it was that there was, they felt, I think there was a dearth of like real top quality candidates who were available, because I think the ones you'd want were in under long-term contracts elsewhere. So yeah, I would expect that situation to be addressed in the second half of the season ahead of next summer, because it's not just in terms of next summer. You know, you want a new person in place before the summer, before, you know, when you get into grips with exactly what the squad needs. But also there's some contract situations that need to be addressed as well, because, you know, Mohamed Salah, Virgil van Dijk, Trent Alexander-Arnold all reaching the last 18 months their current deals. And that, you know, I think that's a relaxed situation at the minute. But of course, the next 6 months are really important on that, because, you know, you then before you know it, you know, we're in the summer and we're talking about players being into their last year, and that always creates, you know, a sideshow.
Let's talk about the summer, and especially around Mo Salah. I mean, I think about this a lot, and AFCON's on its way. It's going to be a tricky one without Mo Salah, who has provided a fair few goals for Liverpool this season. What's the position here? Are Liverpool reluctant to say that, you know what, he's probably going to leave and they're starting to look at life beyond Mo Salah, or is nothing quite set yet? Is this all still part of the rumour mill?
Yeah, nothing is set. I mean, even rewinding to the summer, when, of course, there was this kind of sustained pursuit of Salah from Saudi Arabia, and not once did he ever kind of agitate or push for a move. His attitude was always, you know, it's down to the club. You know, it's this, you know, I'm under contract. I'm fully committed. Unless Liverpool get the kind of offer that they feel they can't say no to. And, you know, as it was, the owners made it absolutely crystal clear there was no price at which they would have done business, because Mo Salah is so influential. And, you know, I think people looked at it and said, oh, you know, come on, in his early 30s, you know, cash in. And I just think that overlooks the fact that Mo Salah is not your regulation type of player for some, you know, for someone of his age. You know, he's an incredible athlete and specimen in terms of, he still never misses any football. It's like, it's crazy. It's not just his goals and assists. It's his durability, which sets him apart. And yeah, I hope he stays around. I think a lot obviously will hinge on what Salah himself wants, because, you know, there was never any chance of anything happening in January. You know what the rumour mill's like. It wouldn't surprise me if there was talk, but that can be dismissed. You know, he's 100% around for the rest of this season. And then I think a lot will depend on what his wishes are, because, you know, Klopp and Liverpool's stance has always been that if someone actually wants to leave and they give them enough time to source a replacement, then they wouldn't stand in their way. But at the minute, Mo Salah does not look to me like someone who's thinking about a fresh challenge. I think, actually, when you speak to people around the club, he's been energized by the injection of fresh blood into the squad this season. You know, that thought of, actually, you know, we are capable of competing for and winning big trophies again. And I think that excites him. And also, I think, you know, when you see the, you know, the goals he scored already this season, was he up to 15 in all comps? You know, and you just think, you know, why would you go to a much lesser league? Why would you? You know, he's still rewriting the record books at Liverpool. You know, every single week it feels like there's another Salah record to be broken. You know, recently, you know, joining the 200 club in terms of goals for Liverpool. You know, he feeds off that. You know, he loves writing his name into the history books of the club. Yeah, I think it'll be a delicate negotiation process, I think, in terms of, because obviously, you know, he's the highest earner at the club, and he'll want to be suitably, you know, remunerated for that. And of course, you know, I think by the time his current deal is up, he'll be kind of approaching, what, 33? But when you look at him, I don't see any reason why Salah can't keep doing what he's doing into kind of his you know, 36, 37 even, because, he is unique. And you just, so much of it will hinge on what he himself wants. And at the minute, you know, he seems incredibly happy where he is.
But you can also understand from a Saudi Arabia perspective, especially the Pro League, you've got probably the biggest Muslim star at a good age who has kind of won everything with his current club. Of course, the record's been set and stuff, but, you know, in their pursuit for excellence and pursuit for what they want, in a weird way, I look at it, and we've spoken about this before, he's a bigger star for them than Cristiano Ronaldo because he ticks all those boxes.
Yeah, he really does. I remember being over in Qatar when Liverpool won the Club World Cup in 2019, and it was kind of Salah mania on a level I'd not seen before. And I've travelled all over the world covering Liverpool, and the noise inside the stadium every time he touched the ball, and you know the screams from the fans outside the team hotel, and yeah, it's difficult to put into words just how high his profile is in that part of the world. So, you know, you knew last summer when Liverpool turned down that, you know, offer that was rising to £150 million. We all knew that wasn't the end of it. You know, we knew they'd be back. You know, if not in January, then next summer. But I don't know. You also look at it and you think from Salah's perspective. You know, you look at someone like Jordan Henderson, who you know has gone over there and. You know, he's obviously earning a hell of a lot of money, but you know that you know he's coming back and playing for England, and people are questioning, kind of like whether he's playing at a high enough level to really do himself justice for his country. And so, you know, you wonder whether that's food for thought for some of these players as well, because it's not as if you know, of course, Mo Salah quadruple his wages. But I think it comes back to your motivation. He's never spacked to me as someone who that is something that really drives him in terms of his bank balance. I think what really excites him is rewriting record books and winning big trophies. And I'm not convinced that even next summer is that really what he's ready for, because you know he could effectively go over there in 3 or 4 years' time, I think. And still probably be by far and away the biggest star and the biggest talent over there.
So quick one, give the Liverpool fans an early Christmas present. Are they going to do Arsenal on the weekend? It's a big one.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it just felt like that win over West Ham was the perfect way to go into it. And I think also with the Klopp kidology saying, you know, come on, you don't need to rely on me having an argument with the opposition coach, which is obviously a reference to his spat with Arteta a couple of years ago that fired everyone up. I think, I think the stage is set for a cracking game. And I think it will just be such a different game as well to the one against Man United. You know, Roy Keane didn't like Virgil van Dijk saying it, but van Dijk was right. There was only one team that was really trying to win that game. And Arsenal won't come and play the same way. They will be more expansive. Yeah. They will ask more questions of Liverpool. There will be more space in behind for Liverpool to exploit. I think Arsenal, they do command respect because I think, you know, when I've watched them this season, they seem to be playing. Last season, you always felt there was so much emotion attached to the way Arsenal played, and that can go one or two ways. And sometimes it probably cost them in the end. I think now they're a bit calmer, a bit more methodical. And you know, it will be a real difficult test for Liverpool, but it feels like the stage is set for Liverpool to really make a statement on Saturday night. So, they just need to go out there. And there's no doubt that Klopp will get the response he asked for from the fans. It's just whether the players can produce on the field, because it will definitely be noisy enough off it.
You know what, James? Expect a bit of social media interaction from me if Arsenal managed to get a result against Liverpool at Anfield. All right, thanks so much for your time. And also thank you all for continuing to listen and support this show through 2023. Check out the latest episode of Walk On, our dedicated Liverpool podcast, for more from James. Please remember to rate and review the podcast if you're enjoying it. Hit follow or subscribe wherever you are listening so you don't miss an episode when we return in early January. Adam Leventhal is here tomorrow with the full weekend preview. Merry Christmas to all of you that are celebrating it. But most of all, enjoy the football. See you soon.
You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beal. The executive producer was AD Moorhead.
The Athletic.